Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. So we've covered the topic of digital forensics and evidence in a couple of podcasts. And an operative word in evidence is the chain of custody. The idea that between the point in time at which evidence was collected and through to its ultimate if it's admitted or exhibited before a court of law, that it hasn't been tampered with or doctored in some way. And the law of evidence is very strict and the procedures are exacting. And there's a lot riding on those who are trying to follow them because it can make or break a case. So for digital evidence, we talked before about the checksums, which could be calculated. And we talked about content authenticity, another very, very topical area, the Content Authenticity Initiative, and their emerging standards are topics that we're going to talk about more. So, but that's hardware level signing, authenticating something. So after we do that, then we need to, between the point in time, we're not going to be introducing it contemporaneously, almost always. So it's going to have to be stored for a while. And we're talking about digital evidence here. So the digital evidence bag or bundle, and it ultimately does get often bundled, and there, this is another topic we could talk about, bundling processes. The Library of Congress has one called Bagit. We want to show that it hasn't been tampered. It has to, so it goes into storage that's called often immutable storage. And this brings us to WORM. WORM, or write once, read many, is an intriguing example of a bug in primitive software becoming a feature in modern software. I mentioned before using optical media for, and that's by design or by nature, often WORM, more often than not. You can burn something once. And that concept has been adopted in media that doesn't need to be WORM because it's not inherently, that's not part of the design, but it's made to be WORM. So I found a couple of years ago, just out of interest, as I guess I do, that there's actually a whole, every type of modern computer storage you can think of, from USB devices to our USB, we call them in Israel, disks on key. USB drive is a term most people would know them by. It's kind of an Israelism. Micro SD, SD, HDD, SSD, NVMe, you name it. Every type of storage that exists, there's a very, very niche and boutique market for WORM versions of that that are engineered to be, that they prevent writing, as well as cloud storage. So you can enable it on S3 buckets, for example, to enable versioning and enable WORM. And likewise, you can buy from niche suppliers WORM media. So I'd like to talk about the actual utility and use for all of this technology. I mentioned evidence as kind of one area, but we also see it, I think, in financial auditing, where you have certain industries that are beholden to particular standards for how they manage data, including the medical, the world of medicine, electronic medical records. And even in those cases, there is a requirement often for immutability. And strangely enough, the hero becomes something called WORM. So Herman and Corin, I'd love to chat today about the continued existence of WORM media, who's actually buying this, and how do we verify if something says it's WORM, that it really is tamper-proof, because they wouldn't be selling this stuff if it wasn't, I'm sure, legally verifiable that no one's tampered with it. But those are, it's almost like adding, well, it is actually, it's adding a feature to the normal functionality of the hardware that doesn't need to be there, which is actually kind of an intriguing concept. It's literally removing a very normal and useful feature in order to do something quite specific. So Herman and Corin, let's talk about Worm storage in 2026. Over to you.
Hey, Herman. Welcome back to the table. It is another beautiful day here in Jerusalem, though I think the winter chill of early 2026 is finally starting to creep through the stone walls of the house.
It certainly is, Corn. Herman Poppleberry here, and I have actually been wearing two pairs of socks all morning just to keep my hooves warm while I was reading through the latest research papers. But honestly, the prompt Daniel sent us this morning warmed me right up. It is right in my wheelhouse.
I saw that. Daniel was asking about WORM technology. You know, it is funny because I usually think of a worm as something that slowly wiggles through the garden, but in the world of data, it is actually about speed and permanence. Or rather, the lack of change. Write once, read many.
Exactly. And it is such a fascinating contradiction in our modern digital world. We spend so much time talking about how data is fluid, how it is constantly updated, synced, and versioned. But WORM technology is the exact opposite. It is the digital equivalent of carving something in stone. Once those bits are set, they are essentially unchangeable.
It feels almost rebellious in 2026, doesn't it? In an era where we can use generative artificial intelligence to alter photos, videos, and even historical records in seconds, having a technology that says, "No, this is exactly what happened, and it can never be changed," feels more important than ever.
You hit the nail on the head. That is precisely why the utility of WORM has exploded recently. Daniel mentioned digital forensics and the chain of custody, which we have touched on in previous episodes, but the scope of this is just massive now. It is the backbone of trust in a world where trust is becoming a very rare commodity.
So, let's start with the basics for a second, because I think people might confuse this with just a read-only file. If I right-click a file on my computer and select read-only, that is not WORM, right?
Not even close, Corn. A read-only attribute in an operating system is like a polite sign that says, "Please do not touch." But anyone with administrative privileges can just ignore the sign and change the file anyway. True WORM technology happens at the hardware or the deep system level. It means the physical ability to overwrite that specific sector of the storage medium is either physically destroyed or cryptographically locked away by the controller itself.
I remember when we talked about optical media back in episode 308. We were discussing how a laser actually burns a physical pit into the surface of a CDR or a DVD-R. That is the classic example, right? Once the pit is burned, you can't unburn it.
That is the gold standard of hardware, WORM. It is a physical change to the material, but as Daniel pointed out, we have moved way beyond shiny silver disks. Today, we are seeing WORM implemented in SD cards, solid-state drives, and even in the cloud. Companies like Swissbit are leading the way here, creating industrial-grade SD cards where the firmware itself acts as a gatekeeper.
That is the part that gets me. How do you do that with a flash drive or an SD card? Because there is no laser involved there. It is all just electrical charges in silicon.
It is really clever. In a WORM-enabled SD card or USB drive, the controller inside the device is programmed at the factory. When a block of data is written, the controller essentially blows a virtual fuse for that block. It marks that sector as permanently closed to new writes. Even if you take that card and put it in a different computer, the hardware itself will refuse any command to modify that data. It will return an error every single time.
So it is like a one-way gate. But I imagine that creates some interesting challenges for the people actually using it. If you make a mistake while writing the data, is that it? Is the drive just ruined?
Pretty much. That is why the software that handles the writing process has to be incredibly robust. You usually have a staging area where you verify everything, calculate your hashes, and then you commit it to the WORM media. It is a very deliberate act. It is not like saving a Word document where you hit Control S every 5 minutes. It is more like a digital ceremony.
I love that image. The digital ceremony of the immutable record. But let's talk about why we need this ceremony. Daniel mentioned legal evidence and the chain of custody. If I'm a forensic investigator in 2026, how am I using this?
Imagine you are at a crime scene. You find a laptop or a phone. You need to make a bit-for-bit copy of that drive, what we call a forensic image. Now, if you save that image to a regular hard drive, a defense attorney could argue in court that you, or someone else with access to that drive, could have opened the file and changed a few bytes to plant evidence.
Right. And even if you didn't do it, just the possibility that you could have done it creates reasonable doubt.
Exactly. But if you write that forensic image directly to WORM Media, and you can prove the media was WORM compliant from the moment it left the factory, that argument disappears. The technology itself becomes the witness. It says it was physically impossible for this investigator to change this data after it was written.
That makes total sense for police work, but Daniel also brought up financial auditing and medical records. Those seem like areas where things are constantly changing. If I go to the doctor, they add new notes every time. How does WORM work in a living document?
That is where we get into the difference between the record and the system. In healthcare, under regulations like HIPAA in the United States, you need an audit trail. You might update a patient's chart, but the original entry from 3 years ago must remain intact and unalterable. You don't overwrite the old data, you write a new version. In a WORM-based system, every single version is saved to an immutable bucket.
So it is like a stack of papers, where you can only add a new page to the top, but you can never erase or white out anything on the pages underneath.
Precisely. And in finance, it is even more strict. The Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, has Rule 17A4. While they recently added an audit trail alternative, many firms still stick to WORM because it is the most ironclad way to prevent companies from cooking the books after the fact. If a regulator comes knocking, they want to see the raw original data, not a version that was polished 3 weeks later.
I'm curious about the cloud side of this. Daniel mentioned S3 buckets. For those who don't know, that is Amazon's simple storage service, which is basically the giant hard drive of the internet. How do you have a WORM drive in the cloud? There is no physical fuse you can blow in a data center thousands of miles away.
This is where we move from hardware WORM to software-defined WORM, or what is often called object lock. But here is the critical distinction for 2026. You have to choose between governance mode and compliance mode. In governance mode, users with special permissions can still delete the data. It is like a locked door where the manager has the key.
And compliance mode?
Compliance mode is the vault with the key thrown into the sun. Once you set a retention period in compliance mode, even the root user, the person with the highest level of authority at your company, cannot delete that data until the timer expires. Not even Amazon support can delete it for you. It is a programmatic lock that is enforced by the very architecture of the cloud service.
That sounds incredibly powerful, but also a little scary. If I accidentally upload 10 terabytes of cat videos and set a 10-year WORM lock on them, I am paying for that storage for the next decade, no matter what.
You are indeed, Korn. You would have the most legally defensible collection of cat videos in history, and a very consistent monthly bill to match. It is a high-stakes game. But for a corporation facing a multi-billion-dollar lawsuit, that cost is a drop in the bucket compared to the risk of being accused of destroying evidence.
We have talked about the who and the why, but I want to dig into the verification part of Daniel's prompt. Because if I am a judge or a regulator, I am not just going to take your word for it that your SD card is tamper-proof. How do we actually verify this in 2026?
This is the critical question. Verification usually happens in three layers. The first is the physical or hardware certification. You have independent labs that test these devices. They try to hack the controllers, they try to bypass the fuses with high voltage, they try everything to see if they can force or write. If the device passes, it gets a certification, like FIPS 140-3, which is the current gold standard for cryptographic modules.
Okay, so layer 1 is trust in the manufacturer and the testing labs. What is layer 2?
Layer 2 is cryptographic. Every time you write a piece of data to WORM Media, you generate a hash, which is like a digital fingerprint. We talked about this a bit in the Subsea Fiber episode, episode 330. If even a single bit of that data changes, the hash will look completely different. By recording that hash at the moment of creation and then checking it later, you can prove the data is identical.
But couldn't someone just change the data and then generate a new hash to match the new fake data?
Not if the hash itself is stored on WORM media or in a public ledger. This is where some people are using blockchain technology as a timestamping service. If you take the hash of your forensic image and you publish it to a source that everyone can see and that no one can change, you have created a permanent anchor.
And what is the third layer?
The third layer is the firmware level. Many modern WORM devices use something called signed firmware. The device will only run code that has been digitally signed by the manufacturer. This prevents a hacker from loading a custom operating system onto the SD card that would allow them to bypass the write protection. It is defense in depth.
It is like having a safe that is inside a vault, and the vault is at the bottom of the ocean. Which brings us to the future of WORM. Why is this so relevant right now, in January of 2026?
Two words, corn, ransomware, and AI. We have seen ransomware attacks get so sophisticated in 2025, they don't just encrypt your files anymore, they go after your backups first. They find your backup server, they delete everything, and then they encrypt your main system so you have no choice but to pay. WORM is the only thing that stops that delete command.
And what about AI? How does WORM help there?
This is the big trend for 2026, data provenance. We are seeing these massive lawsuits about AI models being poisoned by bad data or infringing on copyrights. If you are building a model, you need a golden dataset, a human-generated ground truth that you can prove hasn't been tampered with by an adversary or another AI. Storing your training data on WORM media ensures that your AI's education is verifiable and clean.
It is about creating a ground truth. In a world of deepfakes and hallucinating AIs, we need a way to point to something and say, this is the original, unadulterated reality.
It is funny, isn't it? We spent decades trying to make storage faster, smaller, and more rewritable, and now the most valuable feature we can offer is the inability to change. It is a total reversal of the digital trend.
It reminds me of that old saying, that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Except in this case, the more things change, the more we need them to stay exactly the same. So, Herman, for someone listening who wants to use this, how accessible is it?
It is actually becoming surprisingly accessible. You can buy WORM-enabled SD cards from industrial suppliers like Swissbit right now. They are more expensive, obviously, because you are paying for that specialized controller and the FIPS certification. For the average person, it might be useful for things like a digital will or preserving family photos that you never want to accidentally delete.
But you have to be careful. WORM is a commitment. If you put your photos on a WORM drive and then you realize you want to crop one of them, you can't save the changes back to that drive. You have to start over on a new piece of media.
It really forces you to be intentional. I think that is a good thing. We live in such a disposable digital culture. WORM is the digital equivalent of film photography. You have a limited number of shots and they are permanent. I think there is a real psychological value in that.
So, looking ahead to the rest of 2026, where do you see this going? Do you think WORM will eventually become the default for certain types of data?
I think we are going to see it integrated into the hardware of our devices more deeply. Imagine a smartphone where the core operating system files are stored on a WORM partition at the factory. It would make it virtually impossible for malware to get a persistent foothold in the system, because the malware literally could not write itself into the boot sequence. It would basically end the era of the rootkit.
That would be a massive leap for security. It feels like we are finally pouring concrete into the sand that the internet was built on. Herman, this has been a blast. I always learn something new when we dive into these technical rabbit holes.
Same here, Korn. And thanks to Daniel for the prompt. It kept my brain busy enough to forget about my cold hooves for at least 20 minutes.
Well, we should probably get some more wood for the fire then. To everyone listening, we really appreciate you spending your time with us. If you have been enjoying my weird prompts, please take a second to leave us a review on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show.
It really does. And you can always find us at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We have the full archive there and a contact form if you want to send us a prompt of your own. Maybe your idea will be the focus of episode 336.
We would love to hear from you. Until next time, keep asking the weird questions.
Goodbye from Jerusalem.
So, Herman, about those two pairs of socks, are they WORM compliant?
They are definitely right once, because once I put them on, I am not taking them off until the spring.
Fair enough. Let's go find that wood.
Lead the way, Korn. Lead the way.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.